This week, Terry Cohen announced that she would be leaving the Salisbury City Council effective August 8th because of personal obligations. She has been a major voice in the council's discussions over whether there should be 5 separate council districts or 2 modified districts. In this rebroadcast on the subject, we include her valued thoughts on this potential major change for the city's political landscape.
Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7. Putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
Redistricting has caused an uproar at the Salisbury City Council recently, setting the stage for potentially redrawing political power in the crossroads of Delmarva. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. It's been some time since the last major change has occurred in the size and shape of the council districts. Back in the 1980s, under a court order, a minority-majority district was carved out for better representation of the African-American community. That still left a separate district for the remaining 4 at-large seats. But that could change. The town of 30,000 has seen its minority community grow to over 40% of the population over the years. To address this issue, one proposal adopted by the city council would have included another representative from the minority-majority district while keeping the remaining at-large district intact. But the council has returned to the issue and is expected to hold a public hearing on a plan presented by Mayor Jim Ireton to divide the city up into 5 separate council districts. Take a look at the impact of such a major change. Our in-studio guests are Council Vice President Laura Mitchell. She is currently seeking an at-large seat on the Wicomico County Council. And Councilmember Shaney Shields, who represents the minority-majority district created in the 1980s. Also, Councilmember Terry Cohen, who has expressed reservations about the separate districts, could not make it this morning, but is set to discuss the issues next Friday on Delmarva Today. So, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with you, Laura. Where are we in terms of what in terms of making the decision about just the shape of the districts? Are we going to have 5 as opposed to the 2 and so on? Where were we in this process first?
Well, there was a decision made based on the last census that would affect the 2013 election, and it did. And what that did was expand the minority district a bit so that it was more representative of our population, which is required. But we didn't change the number of representatives per district in that plan. But as a part of that charter change, they also made changes to what map would be used for the 2015. In that, there would be 2 representatives elected from the minority district and 3 from the rest of the city. That does change the number of representatives from each district. So that would needed to go to court because we're under a consent decree from 1987. And that was never sent to the court. So at this point, we're looking to see. We know we have to send it to the court. We have to send it soon so that it can be approved and completed, that whole process done before the 2015 elections. However, the discussion ensued. The mayor asked us to reconsider the 5 district map that he had proposed when this came up the first time. And the council was willing to do that. And we have, I think, a majority that favors, at this point, it looks like a majority that favors the 5 single member districts, which meets the requirements for the numbers on as far as splits in population, as does the map that's proposed to be used right now. But this one is a little more fair because in this map, using the 5 single member districts, everyone in the city gets 2 votes every time. They will get 1 vote for a council member in their district and 1 vote for the mayor, versus the other map where the minority district would vote for 2 council members and the mayor, and everyone else would vote for 3 council members and the mayor. So it's about equality and it's about fairness.
By the way, why was it that the original proposal, the 2 and 2, why didn't that go to the judge?
That's a really good question. I asked a number of times. It was under the leadership of the council majority. It was up to them to send it. They adopted it. They needed to send it. There's been some comments about the mayor not sending it, but it wasn't the mayor's responsibility. It was the city attorney's responsibility to send it. He was under the direction and direct supervision of council president and vice president, And none of them sent it, despite a number of requests by myself in particular to speed that up. When are we going to do this? Because I knew Ms. Shields and I did not like that map, did not approve of that map. We felt that the five districts was more fair, as did the ACLU and the NAACP. And we had an attorney that was ready to help us pro bono stand with the NAACP and the ACLU and ask the court not to approve that map, but to approve the five-district map instead. So I was very on top of when they were going to send that, and they never did.
So would it be fair to say that the consideration of what looks like might be going with the five district as opposed to the expanded minority district with the two reps, that this represents basically a shift in the council in terms of its composition, that the old council previously with Debbie Campbell had favored this, and now with Jake Day coming on, the sort of sentiment has shifted. Is that a fair assessment of what's happened here?
Well, when you have a five-person council, it really only takes one to swing it one or the other. If you've got two on each side and there's one seat that changes, whichever way their vote goes, changes it. And it just seems that we have a majority. I don't want to speak for Jake or anyone else, but it seems that we have a majority that is in favor of the what I perceive to be more fair five-district map. It also gives people a little more buy-in, I think, a little more ownership. If you can walk to your representatives off home and talk to mm-hmm. them, you know them. They know the issues in your community better. Someone living in the South End doesn't understand necessarily the issues that of traffic and other things that someone in the North End is dealing with, and vice versa. The people in the North End might not understand the issues of college students walking through your yard and you know the parties and that kind of thing that you hear about. Whatever those issues are, they're different. They're different no matter where you are in the city. So breaking it up into five districts, I think, is the best thing to do.
Shani, so what is your sense about this entire process that's unfolded? I'm sure you have a few things. I mean, obviously you didn't like the one that was basically expanded with two reps for the minority. Go ahead.
I never understood why we had two districts. I wasn't part of, I knew about the lawsuit in the 80s, but I wasn't in the political world then. And what I saw, and I always questioned, why didn't we have more than two districts? I understand why they formed the minority district, but things change also. And I think when I sit on the council, I try to look at what is fair for the city of Salisbury and the citizens. And to me, what is fair is having more than two districts. Five is because you have, right now, the way we had it before, you had one neighborhood actually controlling the political life of the city of Salisbury. And we went through all this public hearings. We went through all this. And my feelings was they were going to keep it the same. So why have these public hearings if you want to keep it the same that you originally had? They increased it a little bit over in the Church Street area and the President Streets, like the Princeton Homes area. But they still kept it at the two districts. And I feel that you shouldn't let one neighborhood control the city, because that's what could happen. Now, I feel that at our last, when we start talking about this, and I have to bring this up and make it public, they talk about renters and homeowners and how many renters live in these districts and et cetera, et cetera. I don't think that's appropriate to bring that into the decision that we make on this districting. They look at who financed our campaign, and I will make it public. Yes, property owners did give me the majority of my money, but I also look at that as they do rent to minorities, because majority of minorities are renters. You have to have an open dialogue with the property owners. Not saying you always agree with them, but if I have a problem or a tenant has a problem, I can pick up the phone and talk to the property owner and try to iron out whatever the concern is before I pick up the telephone and call neighborhood services. I try to help them help themselves. Like if I see a drug traffic, I call them. If I see a door hanging, I call the owner of the property. And I have that relationship. And business owners and property owners pay the bulk of the taxes in the city of Salisbury. And I think I try to treat people the way I want to be treated. And if that's, and I think candidates who want to be in politics, they should not be ashamed or fearful of who donates to them, long as it's not drug money and mafia money. That's what I've said. Long as legal money, you should not be afraid of who donates to your campaign, because that's part of the process. And I think that someone on the north side of Salisbury, they have issues. I live on the west side of Salisbury. There's two different neighborhoods. I don't know what, you know, there's two different neighborhoods. Some of the people that even are in office may not even know what's going on in my neighborhood. They may not even ride through my neighborhood. And I think that from example that the previous president, Ms. Louise Smith, did, she lived in a neighborhood, affluent neighborhood, but she took time and went to Church Street and did several cleanup campaigns. And I appreciated that, because she saw the needs of those people, and she made friendships with one of the first Habitat owners over there. And she's still working with this particular lady because they built that friendship and trust among both of them. And I like to see that happen. If you're going to say you're representing the whole city because you've got two districts, I can't believe they do. I really can't believe it. And I think this five districts, as Laura said, we supported the five districts. And I continue to support it. I will not ever vote for two districts again. I think our city is growing. If town of Fruitland and Princess Anne, those little small towns have districts, why can't we, the largest city on the Eastern Shore, why can't we have five districts?
Let me bring in there, because one of the things that strikes me is that there's this discussion about whether or not you can represent, for instance, other parts of the city. I mean, and I know that Terry Cohen, who does not necessarily favor the five districts, she says that, you know, she says, I don't represent where I live. I get calls all over the city, including the other district. That's what she says. Now, first of all, what's your reaction to that? But, and second of all, it hasn't always been this way in terms of people. There have been a variety, for instance, of people on the city council from the at large. I mean, I recall Rachel Polk, for example.
Yes, she did. She,
you know, so she also represented, and she was African American. So, I mean, you don't think that's possible to represent it?
Well,
or?
I think that.
Go ahead.
I can't prove that people call, but if someone called me from District 2, I would let the people that represent District 2 know. I think we were doing the only road issue, and the man called me. You know, you let people know the concerns coming from somebody else's district. Now, part of Camden Avenue is in District 1. So if anyone called her, Smith Street, you know, the college student problem, they may have called her with that. I do not have the college student parties like Camden Avenue and other neighborhoods. I don't have that problem. But if someone called me and said they had a party in District 2, I would make it known that I received a call. And I would also ask the person, is it okay to share that name? Now, I did have someone come to me concerning a problem they had, and I let everyone know. I can't say because it's a personnel matter, but I shared it with the whole council. The concern.
So, are you saying that
if someone called from my district?
Now, have you had Terry Cohen say get a call and say then refer it to you? Have you had any?
She would let me know. She can handle the problem. But tell her not to handle it.
But she has let you know.
No.
No, she has.
No,
not.
I've never.
You have not gotten any calls.
No, I haven't gotten any calls from her at all. And I feel that if it's a concern, if it's safety, safety, housing, a particular landlord or something, they say I'm in their pocket, so why she can't? She say, well, call one of your buddies and tell them this is going on. You know, I've never, ever, I always hear about phone calls, and then they say they're afraid to give their names because they're afraid of intimidation, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the excuses we've had over the years. But all I'm saying is I feel that if something's going on in District 1, she should at least make me aware of the problem. Not saying she shouldn't solve it, but at least make me aware of the problem. I get calls from the county all the time. All the time. And what I do, I refer them to people, and then Sheree and I talk. Mm-hmm. You know, see, and that's how it should be. So you know what's going on in your name, because I'm one person. And you can't be everywhere, you know. So I appreciate if she would let me know, or anybody.
Right.
But if they're representing the city, so they can take care of the problem, but just let me know if it's really especially a serious problem.
Laura, I'm going to turn to you. How much of this really is about landlords, the Salisbury, I think it's Area Property Owners Association? Because I know that there was this, certainly Debbie Campbell, who is now gone from the council, but certainly had strong ties to Terry Cohen and Tim Spees, that she shared a She was very concerned about rentals. She was very involved with the 4-2 movement, which wanted to restrict the number of unrelated people who could be a rented apartment. How much of this is about landlords and rentals, do you think?
From my perspective, zero. I don't think it has anything to do with it.
But what about the politics of this? Because
yes.
It seems to me that there's part of that going. I mean, if you live in a particular neighborhood and you're concerned about rentals,
right.
They're not. And I know that there's been sharp criticism, certainly from Cohen, but other folks on the council, from her, I guess her side of the majority, of SOPOA and of the rental issue.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think that was going to be a part of the issue until we were at the meeting. And mm-hmm. one council member asked for an overlay of the district maps with owner-occupied properties versus rental properties. And that made me take notice because I don't know what that has to do with it. We have somewhere close to 70% rental properties in the city of Salisbury. So that is a majority. If you want to look at who should have the voices on the council, then we should have 70% representation of renters and 30% from homeowners. If you want to do it by that. But the Constitution doesn't allow us to determine whether you can vote based on ownership, home or property ownership. It doesn't allow that. And so, and the property owners who don't live here can no longer vote in the city. That went away years ago. But there is seems to be a force there that wants to hold on to that. And the accusation was thrown out that breaking up into smaller districts would allow these landlords to come in and buy the votes of these representatives because they're smaller districts that would be easier to buy. First of all, our contribution limit is $250. If you come that cheap, then you shouldn't be on council to begin with. So that's a pretty low threshold. So I really don't think that when you see the numbers of what people raise for a city council race, it's really not that important, and it's not that big of an influence. It takes money to run a campaign. That's the way it is. As Ms. Shields said, that's the way our system works. I'd rather it didn't, but it does. So you look to the groups that support you for what you're going to do. Now, whether you're supporting them wholeheartedly, blindly, whatever they say goes, and that's the way you vote, you're probably not going to stay on council very long, because that's for any constituency. That's not just for landlords, because you're not open-minded enough and you're not considering the facts. We go through a great deliberation on pretty much everything we look at. Some things are fairly simple, but there have been a couple of votes I didn't know how I was going to vote until it came out of my mouth at the table, because it was 6-1, half a dozen another, and it was a very tough choice. There have been 3 votes like that, and I can tell you what they are. And none of them had to do with property issues, really. So it's not for me, it's not a part of it. With the 70% rentals, they are spread all over the city. There are only one or two neighborhoods that don't allow it at all, rentals in their neighborhood. Mm. So they're really the minority. So everyone has issues in terms of renter versus owner-occupied. Some people have a bigger issue with it, I think maybe personally, than actual problems that they could point to. So for me, it's not an issue. In terms of the district, representing a district versus the citywide, I forget which district I'm from because I have to think about
it.
The election, it doesn't – no, I mean even now. When someone asks me, oh, you're in District 2, right?
Right, exactly, right.
Yeah, I'm in District 2. Because it beyond the election point, it really doesn't matter to us. But it's not about what matters to us. It's about what matters to the citizens of Salisbury and the voters. If we can break that down into smaller groups and give them more ownership and more buy-in of who they're electing, that someone from their neighborhood understands the issues they're facing that city council can impact. There are a lot that they face that we don't have any impact on, any ability to impact. But if they feel that way, then I would hope we would be able to see a higher than 17% turnout in an election, that we might see more candidates. The other option that we have facing us by breaking it up into smaller districts, we may be able to eliminate the primary because you might only have two or three candidates from each district and two or three candidates for mayor. And then so then it's not such a long list. If you if you're picking for three seats and you've got four people that run for each seat, that's too long a list for a general election. But if it's two or three from each district and two or three for a mayor, that's not so bad. You could eliminate the primary, and that's about $26,000 that we could save there each election every 4 years, and then have just the general, all the names on the ballot at the general. So there are a lot of advantages to doing it this way. And one other thing that I will mention, when we looked at the maps and the numbers, and they gave us a map that showed minority populations versus majority populations. Now, also keep in mind that this goes by the Voting Rights Act,
right.
And the only minority that's considered is African American. They don't consider, we have much greater than 40% if you add in the Latino, right. The Haitians, the Asians, and all the other
various groups, yeah.
Various groups that we have. So just talking about African American, we're over 40%, or just about 40%. But they couldn't say, unlike maybe early years or different years, they're all right here. This is where you're, this is your majority district. I'm sorry,
majority district. Yeah.
Yes, this gets a little crazy.
I know.
And so it's, we just draw the line around here, and here's the majority. It wasn't like that. They're very dispersed throughout the state. I mean, the state, throughout the city. You know, there are pockets here, pockets there, pockets here. But mostly, there's a great deal of integration throughout our city. And so that makes it really hard to say, okay, these are the two areas that are the minority districts. So having the five districts, there will be two that are in the predominantly minority districts. But there will be plenty of opportunities in the other districts, and even greater opportunity for minorities to get elected. We've had one elected from the majority
district.
Ms. Polk. But mostly they've come from the minority district. But this would make it even broader opportunity.
Let me ask you before I leave politics. One of the things that strikes me is that Mayor Jim Ireton came in very tough on rent, on the landlords. I mean, he proposed some real legislation that that Sapol was really not happy about, to say the least. And now here we find a situation where he's proposing five districts, and there is this fear, certainly on the part of, say, Ms. Cohen and Mr. Spees, that they may have too much influence. Now, these two people were applauded, as I recall it, Jim's ascension to the mayorship. It seems to me like that old alliance, whatever it is, between Jim Ireton on the one hand and the former majority on the other, has sort of all broken apart. Is that a correct reading, Laura?
I think so. I think when you come into office, you come in with a perspective of what you think things are and what you think you'll be able to do. And you find out quickly that you're not able to affect all the change that you think you could, or that it's not as easy as you would like for it to be. And you start to realize that the only way you're really going to get anything done is by bringing everybody to the table to sit down and discuss it and find out everyone's perspective. Because I know I don't have all the answers, and I'm smart enough to know that and say, hey, let's go find the people that do. And I think that Mayor Ireton has made that transition, and in terms of the election districts, doesn't see this as a renter versus owner-occupied issue either, as we've said. So I think that's kind of the two pieces of it, is that it's really not an issue about owner-occupied versus rental, and a certain realization that even issues that are predominantly to do with rentals, you have to have people at the table that can help you find a working solution. We can pass legislation to say, this is the way it is. But if all you're going to do is spend a bunch of money in court fighting it because no one will adhere to it because it's unreasonable or undoable, then what have you gained?
Shani, I want to ask you, so do you think that the African-American community has been well represented, at least the way it has been, do you think that in the past, that at least in previous councils, that there has been sort of, there's a minority representative, and then there's like the four others? I mean, I've heard that, certainly reaching further and further and back. I think it's Von Ziegler's, when she first came on, people have observed that she would raise issues, but the other four would then talk amongst themselves. What kind of response do you think you're getting as a representative of the minority community on the council in general? And yeah.
Well, I get positive response. They want me to not to leave City of Salisbury. When I've attended, been attending council meetings over 25 years under Paul Martin,
mm-hmm.
and I used to go in and sit with Mayor Martin and discuss issues because I became active in the community when I moved back home through migratory labor, which dealt with the Haitian community especially. Mm. So I'm familiar with the Haitian community a great deal. I have a relationship with them. But I look at myself as a servant. I would say I'm a servant and not a politician because I'm here to serve. And I don't agree with Laura a lot.
Okay.
I'm not a lot, but, you know, yeah. We had a vote the other day.
There are times.
Every once in a while. Okay.
I said, I'm saying nay to everything. I said nay, I think, to everything we all did the other. I said nay. And for some, I do that.
Yeah.
And I'm more of a social justice type. When you want to call me a politician or servant, I look at the social justice part of people that live in my community. Now, when they did the 4-2, I was definitely against that because people have to help one another. If you have a son that can't find a job, he's going to move in with you. Well, he's part of your family, but guess what? He's considered homeless if he's grown. If he's grown and he has no place to stay, you have a homeless child in your home. Federal government classifies you as homeless. I didn't know that. Then you had three veterans come who fought for their country and they were going to Salisbury U. And because they were unrelated, they had three bedrooms, they had a nice house, they wanted to live in a nice neighborhood. Well, somebody called and they were evicted. The landlord had to evict them. The landlord didn't want to evict them, but he had to, and here they fought for their country. I thought that was totally unfair. There should be exceptions. I don't believe that we should turn any more houses into like rooming houses or mm-hmm. apartments. I do agree with that. However, when older people die, this is how this is happening. Older people die and leave these big homes. Your children don't love the home like you did because they move away, probably financially, you know, because they want to get a job or they move away. So when the parents die, what do? They sell it to a buyer. You sell it to a buyer because, you know, they want to get rid of the house. So that's some of the problems, especially in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The people have moved away, lived away, taught from home, because that was a professional neighborhood where I live. But, like, my cousin Murray is 100 years old. Well, her children, you know, they lived away. So they're not going to come back on Pearl Street and live. So these are the kind of examples, I think, why there was those big homes like in Camden. I grew up here all my life. So those big homes are like castles to me when I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate the decor. I appreciate the architecture. Don't get me wrong. But realistically, people, especially older people, not going to buy homes, or older people because of health have to move out. And their children live away. They're going to sell it to the highest person. Or then the foreclosures have driven even also rental people. Because I lost my home through foreclosure. Now I'm a renter now in the City of Salisbury. So there's all kinds of circumstances that we have to look at when you make decisions. Why are these people living this way?
And you don't think that the previous, one of the previous majorities anyway, really took that into account.
No, they don't. They're not social justice people. They want social service to handle that. I think we're social justice people too. I think we're a service type. Or yes, we legislate rules and regulations, but I also look at why are you going to legislate stuff that's going to make it harder for the under the low income person.
By the way, have you as a district? Do you think that you've gotten your share of the bacon, as it were? That is to say that you got, there are a lot of political figures where you get investment into your into your community as a result of whether it's tax incentive or whatever it is. I mean, do you think you're getting your fair share?
Yes.
You do think? Okay.
Yes.
Despite the current majority
the
last majority.
And the reason why I'm going to say this, someone told me once, if you get a quarter of the pie this time, you might get a half a pie. And one of the first thing we did when I got on council, I talked about the flooding issue on Germania Circle. Well, now we've got in our budget $110,000 to do the study. It's been for years, these people since the 50s had this flooding issue. And then we got the River's Edge project, which I didn't agree with the total concept of artists, but I had compromised because that building got torn down and $20 million investment is coming on Fitzwater Street. There's the playground on Lake Street. Since I've been in Inception, I was part of the design, and we got a new playground. So I think on that particular west side of the water, I think I've seen a lot of progress. When I came on, there was no drugstores. We've got two drugstores now on the west side. So we have a coffee shop. Dairy Queens come, Dunkin' Donuts come. So I think we're doing it for whatever reason. If it's to do the Nanticoke Road people, I don't care. It's in my district. So I think we have accomplished a lot.
Thank you, Council Vice President Laura Mitchell. She is currently seeking an at-large seat on the Wicomico County Council, and also Councilmember Shaney Shields, who represents the minority-majority district that was created in the 1980s. And we appreciate you taking the time to stop by and talk with us.
Thanks for having me.
And up next, we're going to be talking about growing older on the Eastern Shore. This is Don Rush, and you're listening to Delmarva Today.
This week, Terry Cohen announced that she would be leaving the Salisbury City Council effective August 8th because of personal obligations. She has been a major voice in the council's discussions over whether there should be 5 separate council districts or 2 modified districts. In this rebroadcast on the subject, we include her valued thoughts on this potential major change for the city's political landscape.
There's a redistricting plan on the floor that could dramatically change the political landscape of the Salisbury City Council. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. The plan recently put forward by Mayor Jim Ireton would end the 2 districts that have been with the city ever since the 1980s, when a majority-minority district for the African-American community was carved out under a court order to better represent that population. The other district, District 2, has 4 at-large members on the city council. But since then, the minority community has grown to over 40% of the population. Under a former council majority, a map was drawn up for a majority-minority district that would have 2 at-large representatives while maintaining a second district with 3 at-large seats on the council. Now the mayor has put forward again a plan for a 5-district council plan and has 2 majority-minority districts. Last week we talked with Council Vice President Laura Mitchell and Councilmember Shaney Shields, who represents the predominantly African-American district. This morning we continue that conversation with Councilmembers Terry Cohen and Tim Spees. And welcome to the program, first of all. Thank you very much,
And
our new digs here.
Good morning. I just found out last night that Mr. Spees was going to be joining me today.
He's just an elusive man. That's all there is to it. Anyway, I want to start with you, Terry, and take us back a little, because I think you recall you were president of the council at the time, that you guys had sort of basically agreed on a 1 particular map. Take us through this thinking about the previous, at least, idea about having maybe 2 districts and having greater minority representation, and then we'll move forward.
Sure, and I have to say there were a lot of statements made by my colleagues last week that are either not true or were, shall we say, offensive. Mrs. Shields has previously said that, we had already made up our minds. Well, if we had already made up our minds, then I spent a lot of time going through information from different states, Washington, Tennessee, South Dakota, looking at fairvote.org's manual. Did you know that there's like 19 different ways to administer election methodologies? So when we started out, not being an expert, I did do a lot of research, dozens and dozens of things, including legal opinions that are found on JSTOR. And the first thing that we had to do was make sure that we were compliant with the Voting Rights Act in terms of the court order that we're under since the late 80s. So that was job one. And then there are election redistricting principles that we were supposed to follow. The question was, what are the communities of interest in Salisbury? It's not just about this neighborhood or that neighborhood or location. You know, really, what commonalities do they share, such as educational level, socioeconomic backgrounds? In fact, the line about race is a very thinly drawn one by the Supreme Court, because on one hand, they want to make sure that you don't do anything exclusionary, but at the same time, you can't do something solely on the basis of race. So it was a very delicate balancing act. We scheduled a number of public hearings. You know, the mayor started out holding one of his own. And we had a couple. We had one in District 1 where nobody came, and after 45 minutes, we closed it down. Others were very lightly populated. As it started out, the mayors, you know, had a lot of, not a lot because there weren't a lot of people there. It was 16 people, I think, had some support for the 5th district. But as we went through, there really wasn't a consensus. And it's a very complicated topic that's really confusing to the public. But here's the bottom line. One of the things that I looked at in my thinking was that they really don't want you to, you know, revolutionize the voting thing. They actually want you to kind of take things gradually, make sure that you take care of the populations that are in question. You have to make sure that you have equal representation for population size. So this seemed like a good way to go. And the interesting thing is we didn't go to Frank McKenzie and say, give us this map. Mr. McKenzie said, based on what I was hearing, because he attended all the public hearings, I'd like to show you how this would look. And when we saw it, we said that that would work, and it did need to be in two steps because of our staggered elections.
Right.
So as I said, it was very complicated, and I'm really very disturbed by the political bent that this has. I mean, the mayor, when he came to us, said, now that we have a new council, I thought you'd like to revisit this. Ms. Mitchell said it was my job to have seen to it that it went to court. Let me share with you what SC 3-4 of our charter says. Ordinances, the mayor shall see that ordinances of the city are faithfully executed. It didn't matter who had hire and fire capabilities on the city attorney. The mayor directs the city attorney, even under the previous charter change that we made, on administrative matters, and the council directed him on council matters. Once we passed the law, it became an administrative matter to carry out and was not done.
So what was your thinking in terms, let's just talk about that original map. So what was your thinking about how you were altering the map, but at the same time, certainly to include greater representation, but at the same time, as I understand from what I'm saying, hearing from you, is that your thinking is that you didn't want to necessarily, or you didn't, were not necessarily obligated or urged necessarily to alter it dramatically. I mean, is that kind of what you're
right? The mayor
saying?
Said, you know, it was important to be bold. Well, there's a difference between bold and reckless, quite honestly. A lot of the support that's been given for making the radical change has not been supported by any data. In fact, there's actually data that shows that, you know, chopping things up can actually diminish it. So you want to be careful what you wish for, because you may end up with people on the council who are, you know, many people on the council who are elected by just 50 to 100 people. You want to be very careful. And I think if we want to find out if this change to November is going to improve our turnout, we need to not throw too many things into the mix. But the considerations that we went through for the map were very, they didn't get into these other issues that have arisen, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, and some of which was statements were ascribed to me when they were actually my colleagues, and I am sensitive to the issues that he brought up because we did see hanky-panky during previous elections. When you talk about neighborhood representation and the fact that, oh, nobody has a chance, well, I looked at the last elections, the previous elections. We did have candidates from other neighborhoods. And Mrs. Shield said that one neighborhood, she didn't call it by name, but let's call it what it is. She was referring to Camden.
Right.
Controlling our city life. Well, when you look at the past elections, number one, it took three elections for there to be three people from Camden. And technically, I'm in, I don't know what neighborhood I'm
right.
in. I joined that association because they were the only ones kind enough to invite me when I first moved to Salisbury. We now have three people from Camden because we have two who live on the same street. The voters put us there. When you take Camden out of the picture of the last election I was in, that Mr. Spees was elected, when you take Camden out of the picture, those other candidates from other areas didn't win their neighborhoods. They didn't win the rest of the city. Maybe if they had won the rest of the city, you know, I had 71.9% of the vote from non-Camden streets. Mrs. Mitchell had close to 70, and Mr. Spees had almost 69%. Let's talk about data and let's talk about facts and get away from the political rhetoric. I even saw an email from former city clerk Brenda Colgrove on, I think it was the day that the mayor presented his multiple plans.
Mm-hmm.
Said, you know, I'm putting these proposals out there, but he had one he was advocating for. She said that our data came in early July. So for 4 months, the council whose job it was to get that process rolling didn't have access.
Tim, I want to turn to you and get your take about the original proposal and then how this process has moved forward. What's your sense about where we've been and where we're going here?
When you say the original proposal,
there was an original one which the council had looked at and under Terry's administration, which basically said, well, they'd have the two districts, but one would be an at large majority district, and then you'd have the three at large. That's where we started from, and then
it's actually called a multiple member.
A multiple
at
member.
Large means that everybody in the city votes for them. So let's be technically correct because that is important.
And let's be sure to say that, you know, everyone in the city votes for the mayor, so redistricting has no impact on the mayoral race, or should not anyway. As Ms. Cohen said, when the two district changes were proposed, this was a ball from left field for us. You know, Mr. McKenzie came to us and said, I think I have something here that meets all of the guidelines that we were set to follow. And we looked at it, and I think our eyes just opened wide and said, this is just what it needs to be. It doesn't upend the districts. It carves out newer areas for enlarging District 1, the minority district. It follows through on neighborhoods that are predominantly of the minority. And when I say minority, I'm only speaking of people of African American descent, not any other minorities, as we are, you know, schooled. And it seemed that everything about it was fair. And that I think Ms. Cohen said it right when she said that it doesn't matter really who is out there as a candidate. The candidates are the ones who get the votes by what the people feel and what the people hear from them. I've been disturbed over the past 15 years as I've been watching this process to see that a great number of candidates come up from nowhere and have never been to council meetings, have never served on a commission or a board, and have never really raised their heads to say anything to government or about government in the entire time that they've been in the city, forever, however long that is. And, you know, it's been the case that those candidates fall by the wayside rather quickly because they have no idea what's going on with city government, what there is about the budget process, what the needs are of the city. or who the players are in this in the big game. I think that's important when we come to making a decision of who it is that's going to be in the seat. And I think that the two district map really doesn't put any different spin on it at all. It just changes the numbers of people in the minority district to be represented, by a minority member. In this case, two minority members in that change. So I think what we have is a good situation here. I it's been said that the people at the north end have much different problems. You know, the north end of town near the mall have different problems from what we have in the south end. And I think that's just foolish to say that. There are no really real differences in a city this small. It may be a pothole, but, you know, give us a ring and the pothole's filled. But in a larger sense, there really are no differences between what we experience on this end of town and what people experience on the other end of town. We are all in this together. And we have a government that addresses everything just that way.
Well, let me ask you, Tim, a follow-up, because, and Terry alluded a bit to it. This idea that there could be undue influence by organizations if there were, say, five districts as opposed to two. I think, if at least from what I read from the reportage of the meetings, I think you suggested. Did you remark on that? And if so, who did you were thinking about? Because you were talking about landlords. Do you think that landlords, for example, would have a greater influence if they were all drawn up into separate districts? What's your sense? Clarify that for us.
All right.
Clarify it for me, too. Because,
I did not single out Mr. Day. Mr. Day was not part of that statement.
Yeah.
And I was misquoted by the Daily Times. But here's what I've been thinking. As I've been watching this for about 15 years or so, and been a part of it for the last 8 years, there has been a group that has been not so silently out there attempting to gain control of the city council for whatever reason. I suspect of some of the reasons, but what I've seen is in that period of time, tens of thousands of dollars have come from this group. And in the most sort of suspicious ways as well. You know, an employee of one of these landlords who probably makes $12 an hour gave a $250 donation under her name, which seems a little fishy to me. And then we get another person from Ocean Pines who happens to be a mother of one of the landlords. And it goes on and on and on and on. But I have to say again that tens of thousands of dollars have been put forth by this organization or members of this organization.
Okay, so, and are you singing out Sapoa, that the Salisbury Area Property Owners Association?
I wouldn't point to the entire organization.
Okay.
You know, this is an organization made up of about 700 people.
Yeah.
You know, there's a core group in the organization that pretty much runs things and does the local politicking about it. I cannot think that any of this is an altruistic measure on their part. What they are attempting to do is gain control of city council, have as many members in the city council as they possibly can to be able to take over, legislation, pretty much. You know, I look at Mrs. Shields, and I'm going to point her out. I'm sorry, but I'm doing this, but every election Mrs. Shields has won has been almost exclusively funded by certain Sapoa members, all right? Every penny that she's brought in for contributions has been given by members.
Which members?
I'm not going to tell you which members. It's public knowledge. Okay. It's out there on the, if you want it, it's on the city clerk's website. She can show it to you. But the thing is, why should we be in a town at this size? Why should we be dragged around by an organization that only pretty much exists to make money? And, you know, Sapoa had a credo, a theme they had in their website, that they existed to minimize the effect of government on their industry, period. They've changed that since, and they've become much more touchy-feely, but that was the intent at that point. And it went on not just with money, but some of these members wrote really scathing, foolish, and lie-filled editorials sent around.
Flyers,
sent around
out
flyers
during the campaigns.
And letters, and stole signs. Well, we can't really prove that, but we have a number. You know, we have a name on the people who wrote the things and sent them around and distributed stuff in the Salisbury University flyer that was unauthorized, and we have a suspect there too. But it's the down and dirty side of politics, and I feel that if we divide the city up into five districts, that's just going to make it so much easier for these people to put a person in there to fund and get the votes for in a primarily rental district, because renters are influenced by their landlords one way or another.
Let me ask you this, because one of the questions raised was how much impact money actually has, particularly at a local level like this. I mean, I remember when I first got here, I was much more used to the idea of large cities, large districts, and money really, really counted. When I got here, someone described a green elected to office as really being how many people will get to know so many people who get to know so many people, rather than necessarily being advertising budgets or even signs for that matter, that this is really about organization and getting out there amongst the people. How much influence, I'll turn to you, Terry, do you think money actually has in all of this?
Well, I think it can have an influence in ways that perhaps you don't always see.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly the more you can get your name out there and get name recognition, that's important. And we saw in the last election, you know, there's a number of people very concerned about the Citizens United decision of the Supreme Court. And yet right here in Salisbury, we saw the National Association of Realtors, PAC, put a substantial amount of money behind our current, you know, president. I'm not blaming him for it, but, you know, this was a group out of Chicago. I want to, you know, make sure that we don't leave the redistricting topic because,
right.
You know, last week was really just, I felt, a series of personal attacks on me and, to a lesser extent, Mr. Spies.
Go ahead.
But, you know, when we were out campaigning, Mr. Spies was, I think, on Truett Street at the time in 2005, campaigning for another candidate. And, you know, he comes, he asks a woman about the competitor's sign in the yard. And she says, oh, well, the man, the landlord, told me to put it there, and if I moved it, he'd evict me. But you just go ahead and give me some brochures, and I'll take him to church. You, I believe, were present when Mayor Ireton was running the first time over in District 1. And a fella came out and said, yeah, my landlord offered me $40 off my rent to vote for your competitor. I know who you are. Weren't you there, Don? I was
around, but I did not hear the specific conversation because I want to make that clear.
But
I was there, and I know that, and I remember the mayor coming up to me afterwards.
So I mean, we hear stories like this all the time. There was, you know, information circulated everywhere that we hate renters, which is ridiculous. I've been a renter. You know, renters are people. It's not about renters, but they kept wanting to gen this up, and Mrs. Shields did it again, based on Mr. Spies's comment. He wasn't talking about the renters. He was talking about the landlords. There's a difference. So that was not, however, part of our redistricting discussion in coming to the plan that we did. She made the accusation that we got together and made up our minds in advance. That did not happen. As I, you know, I've told you how Mr. McKenzie came. Because I didn't know. I'm not a redistricting expert. That's why I did hundreds of hours of research. You can ask my family about that. And why we held the public meetings that we did, because we were trying to find out what are the unique characteristics that would, you know, what are the communities of interest in the lingo of redistricting. And when you talk about the neighborhoods, let me tell you about the neighborhoods. What do Camden and North Salisbury have in common? Well, there was a neighborhood affected by noise from commercial areas. In Camden, there was a group that portion of it affected by noise from commercial areas. I don't know of too many neighborhoods in this town that are not affected by crime. When you look at the East Main Street Neighborhood Association, which I think I helped get started because I was called by someone there, And they were talking about a problem that they had with crime, and I suggested that they start a neighborhood association, and they did, and I was privileged to be at a number of their meetings. So they're on the east side of town. And then I get calls from the north side because, you know, I've been a big advocate for doing something about the Naylor Mill issue because of the number of serious accidents that we've had there. When you talk about communities of interest, what do Johnson Lake and Camden have in common? Well, they both are home to college professors. Newtown, same thing. Newtown and Camden are both historic districts. So, I mean, I can go through our neighborhoods throughout the city and show you the commonality. And I'll disagree with Mr. Spies just a little bit. I do think that there are individual issues that do come up. But I take great exception to Mrs. Shields' comment that I get phone calls, but I won't reveal who they are, and she can't prove that they happen. She does the same thing and has for years, and I have never, ever called her integrity or honesty into question. And I resent like heck her doing that to me. I think that that was extraordinarily unprofessional. So when we talk about communities of interest, I mean, there were some folks who got up and said, gee, I'd like to see older people, you know, but that's not one of the things in protected classes that we had to worry about with the Voting Rights Act.
That's true.
You know, we have 34% African American in our city now. We have another 10%, 7 of which are Hispanic, and the other 3% are other minorities. See, I know my facts, and that's what I based my decision on. And Ms. Mitchell brought up a very important point, which is they are dispersed throughout Salisbury. And to Salisbury's credit, we do have some pockets of African Americans, you know, concentrated. But for the most part, our minorities are spread throughout the city, so it was really hard. If you do these five districts, you're not going to make it any greater opportunity for minorities to get elected than what they already have from the standpoint of what we have. I mean, show me the data that will prove that you do. Based on the stats that we saw from Mr. McKenzie, we didn't see that. And again, you can't use race as your only criteria. There's got to be other things. There are commonalities between the West Side and Church Street and President's Neighborhood and Princeton Homes. There is a larger population of various minorities there. There's also a higher concentration of crime, which is of great concern. And I've been very vocal about that over the years, even for the parts that are not my section. Ms. Shields made the assumption that the calls I get from her district are from, like, Smith Street, and they're calling about college parties. Well, we did have a major incident on Hazel Avenue, and it was a big suck of our police resources, but the last call that I got there was about a drug deal going down. These are the issues that people in this town care about. And trying to stir things up and create an uproar, I believe was your word last time. You know, I think that's really part and parcel of what this is. Let's create an uproar. When really it should be about, you know, following the principles of redistricting.
Let me ask you this, because mm-hmm. when Mayor Ireton came into office, and we've talked about this before, he certainly looked up on you and Debbie Campbell, who was on the council at the time, Tim Spies. And you all seem to be on the very same, a similar page in terms of issues of landlords. And as Tim has pointed out, he fears that there might be an undue influence if you, like, divide them up in the districts. Now, I would assume that the mayor still has concerns about the influence of landlords. What's happened here? I mean, why would he put together, say, or put forward a five-member district if at the same time thinking that what he wants to make sure that there's some kind of crackdown or some kind of control of landlords that's similar to what you've described? I mean, there seems to be this disconnect for me.
Well, interestingly enough, you asked that same question of Ms. Mitchell last time.
Right.
In another sort of way. And just as it was not a consideration for us, perhaps it was not a consideration for him. I really don't know. He talked, you know, Ms. Mitchell talked about bringing everybody to the table. Well, I did sit down and meet with a group of landlords about what was going on. I did present on Safe Streets, you know, how statistics fell out. And for my trouble of doing so, a landlord came up this close to my face and threatened me. That was not a consideration in my decision making. You know, again, I read everything that I could on what it was I was supposed to be basing my decisions on. But you asked the question of Ms. Mitchell. You asked her to speculate on the falling out that we've had, that Mr. Spies and I have had with the mayor. And with all due respect, she doesn't know. And that's not what happened. And maybe at a later time when we're not really focused on redistricting, we'll have a conversation about that. I think it's more important right now for the public to really understand what the issues are involved in redistricting. And here's one of my concerns right now. To have brought this up again at the what is essentially the 11th hour, because remember, when we did this the first time, we were under a time gun.
Right.
Because it takes sometimes about a year to get this through court. And Ms. Mitchell said, oh, well, we had a pro bono attorney who was willing to help us, you know, go get the five. Well, that was the ACLU's attorney, which were the people who were threatening us with litigation. That's really not an appropriate. You want to have a cooperative relationship. Heck, I was a card-carrying member of the ACLU in my younger days, and I still love the organization. I don't agree 100% with everything, just like any organization I belong to. But this was the council's, you know, process and decision to make. That's why they're called councilmanic districts. And I think that this whole process was politicized, not by us, from the get-go. And to bring it up now, we are now looking at, oh my God, if we don't get this into the court, we may have our elections in jeopardy. You want to talk about uproar? These manufactured crises, that has been a story in the Salisbury history books and a page from the playbook from day one. And frankly, that is one thing I've tried really hard to get our government to stop doing.
We've been speaking with Terry Cohen and Tim Spies, both council members on the Salisbury City Council, talking about redistricting. No doubt we will be talking about this again and lots of other issues. I do really appreciate you coming on and talking
about
it.
Could I just say that we're scheduled to have a public hearing March 29th. That's Thursday at 6 p.m. I'm sorry. I did it again. Me and my Emma.
May 29th. Right.
May 29th, Thursday at 6 p.m. at the government office building. We would like the public, you know, to provide input. I don't know if one public meeting versus all the ones that we had would change my mind overnight. But I do think it's important for them to be re-involved in the process since it has been reopened. And I think that there are other, you know, approaches we might be able to take.
This week, Terry Cohen announced that she would be leaving the Salisbury City Council effective August 8th because of personal obligations. She has been a major voice in the council's discussions over whether there should be five separate council districts or two modified districts. In this rebroadcast on the subject, we include her valued thoughts on this potential major change for the city's political landscape.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, DelmarvaPublicRadio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.